Hello, my name's Kate Rolls and I'm interviewing you for the Wellcome Trust, so you're taking part in Anthony Gormley's One Another. The date today is the 6th of October 2009 and the time is 1:25 p.m. If I can please ask you to say your name, your age and where you're from.
My name is Luke Walton, I'm 44 years old and I'm from Bristol.
And how are you today, Luke?
I'm very well, thank you very much, and looking forward to the coming hour, yeah.
What was it that motivated you to apply to be part of One Another?
Combination of two things. First of all, I saw that the project had started, although I hadn't got wind of it before it began. And a lot of colleagues said, what are you going to be doing about this? Because I work as an arts development officer, creative director, and in a variety of creative projects. But long, long before that, I really liked Mark Wallinger's Ecce Homo, and just the fact that the fourth plinth was empty and that one might occupy it with something that was engaging in a different way in such an extraordinary context, such a remarkable place. So when I went for my job interview in 2005, my current job, I made a number of kind of pitches, as it were, of what I would do when I was covering a broad range of arts, from installations and fine art and film and theatre. And most of the time I focused in film, but one of the things I said in my interview was, I raised the issue of the plinth and said what a brilliant opportunity it was, what a fantastic location, the idea of integrating the public square with the artwork and so on and so forth, and that we really ought to think about doing something that as an organisation that I was working for and applying to. And so when it came up, I felt kind of slightly honour-bound, really, that I'd already said, you know, if ever I got the chance to do something, I'd go and take the chance. So I then made an application and started thinking through a thousand different ways of responding to the space. So that's how I came to be involved.
And when you found out that you had got a place on the plinth, what happened then for you?
Well, I was quite shocked initially, because I thought, first of all, you can't be certain that you're going to get a place, because about 1 in 15, if not less than that, do get an opportunity. Secondly, I realised I'd been given a really plum spot, because the middle of the afternoon is very nice. Middle of the morning is a very different kind of zone. So the time of day you're doing something is different, and you can't be exactly sure you would do one thing or another. So there was a little bit of shock in it, and also a little bit of, right, have I got what it takes to rise to the challenge? Because I didn't want to just walk on and simply be, which is an interesting reflection myself on what do I think is going on when we're there. On the other hand, with an acting background, I didn't want to do just non-stop performance. For one thing, an hour of street theatre is incredibly difficult to sustain on the pavement, let alone sort of 20, 30 feet up and on a plinth that you could fall off the side of. So there were a number of things went through my mind at that stage as to how I'd respond. But I had a really interesting discussions with lots and lots of people about what they would do and how they would have responded to it. And in the end came down to one of the ideas that I wanted to build on two kind of works. One is Mark Wallinger's Ecce Homo, which I wanted to echo somehow. In fact, I thought of calling the piece Ecce Homo, but that was too cheesy. I also decided that you had to know what I was going on about, and most people won't sort of know. But for the record, that is what I wanted to do. Echo something of that smallness in the space. I wanted to try and respond with height, because I was just challenged by the fact you're already high, but actually how do you build height into it? And what do you do with that? And I also wanted to do something that engaged with faith and spirituality and the spirituality of it. And people have responded in all sorts of different ways, in their nakedness, in their silence, in their prayer, in people have performed rituals, and all sorts of things have gone on up there. So I wanted something of that. And that's partly because I think the most moving work that I've seen of late was Blind Sight in the Haywood Gallery, one of Anthony Gormley's works before. And I kind of thought, this is amazing. I went and stood in Blind Light. Now I can be part of one of his creations, which is, for me, is, you know, that's terrific. And means a great deal. My particular work is involved with, I work for a Christian charity called Bible Society, which has been around for 200 years, and its background was it's one of the Clapham sect charities, William Wilberforce, Shaftesbury, and John Newton, a whole bunch of people, really gathering around a society that was trading people and all those imperial kind of heady days, and wanting to challenge that. And one of the things that underlay that was a challenge to around what are we going to build our society? What are we going to build it around? And for 200 years, the society has been distributing, translating and taking Bible and scripture out to different people. And my responsibility is an artistic response to that within the UK. I also work with colleagues who have other kind of environments to work within. And that, I think, for me is about stories people can engage with and touching on the iconic and the visual that connects with where people are at. And I think questions are the way in. So for this particular piece, I wanted to respond with questions and invite people to bring their questions to it. But I wanted something very iconic. So in the end, I've chosen the cross, which is hugely iconic, ancient, imperialist, which is quite interesting because we've got other imperial structures around us and it was used most by Imperial Rome to slaughter its enemies. But it's also been taken as a symbol of hope, fear. It reminds people of Sunday school. People wear it as jewellery. And there are a whole bunch of questions around it. So questions like, is this an icon? Is it an offence? Is it offensive for me to put it up there? I'm in the public square. If I'd been here 2 days ago, of course, there would have been the Diwali celebration going on while I raised a cross, which would have been a very interesting scenario to have been in. And what does that mean? And how do we talk about faith in the public square in a way that doesn't encourage a sort of fundamental and a kind of subversive and an undercurrent that's unhealthy? How do you express what is permissible, what's allowed? So I've been asking around on the internet and my friends and contacting people, and some of them are saying questions which I suppose show their own fears and not quite understanding where we are as a culture now. Is it all right for them to wear a cross to work? That's one of the questions I got asked. Am I allowed to do that anymore? And who says what I'm allowed to do? So there are all sorts of questions which I want to nail up there. And I've also taken as inspiration one of those kind of Tibetan prayer trees where people hang ribbons on them and they flutter in the wind. Now, of course, there's a huge risk factor here. It's like a huge winds gust across the square, and will mine blow away? Will it fall over? Will it crack? You can have some sleepless nights thinking about this before you get here. And I've done what I can to prepare, and that's what I've done. I hope it's a place that people can engage with. I've chosen to use texting because there's an interesting crossover there between somebody who seems to be working with an ancient text and text. You know, there's a kind of there's something subtle there that I hope people would pick up eventually, but also simply as a means of communication. I'm also very aware of the internet because I'm living in Bristol. I visited the plinth, I think about 4 times before now to see other plinthers, particularly try to catch them at change over time, so I've had a slice of two performances. But I've watched far more on the internet, so I've seen both summary programmes and also the various different ways you can log on. I think that's been very interesting because it's just seeing how people have responded to that moment, the enthusiasm, the energy. I'm going up anticipating that I could get very wet today, but I think I saw that coming a long way back, and I was very inspired by a plinther who just sat in a complete downpour with no attempt to hide from the rain, no umbrella, no seat, no anything. And indeed, somebody who came on before me this morning who was in a design outfit there, a design student, a fashion design student, and they just sat there in the rain. I just got a huge respect for that, and I think that when you've looked at the website and you've heard some of the people speaking about it beforehand and the commentators who've kind of talked about it, there is a large plinth is also a performance stage. So it's hard not to feel there's an element of performance within it, in whatever one does. And I've tried to work out, therefore, a line between the hours long piece of street art and performance art, which I felt was difficult to sustain, and yet also recognizing that whatever I do at some level is performance. I think integrity is really important with this. So there is an element of me that's a little bit fearful of what may or may not come my way as a result of doing it. On the other hand, I think people are just intrigued, and I hope it's intriguing. I hope it's visually stimulating. I hope that it has something that's really quite striking to look at as you go past. And it's a unique privilege. This is, as I understand it, I might be wrong on this, but as I understand it, all the road signs that I ever drive past, way, way away from here, are telling me how many miles it is to London, and actually what they're telling me is how many miles it is to this square, as I understand it. And I might be wrong, but it's kind of very central point. You've got government to one side, you've got the arts and the entertainment industries in another, you've got religion in another, you've got the places of power and media all around you. So it's extremely kind of, it's an epicenter place, and yet it's putting normal people here, and it's a place of, this is a place of rallies, a place of stimulation. And I think 200 years on from what Wilberforce was doing, it's still a place where we can engage with Bible and those ancient texts that have formed and shaped and influenced our society, not always for the better, but I hope in this case for the better.
Where have you got the cross from?
One of the things I will say when I get up there is I want to give a thank you to Scrap Store. Scrap Store is a national charity that produces a whole load of scrap to inspire young people and work with lots of children's charities and the like. And they provide recycle a whole bunch of materials. And I went down there to source my material. I could have gone to a hardware store and just bought some lengths of timber, but I went there just to see what they got and what might inspire me. And they're very creative people, and you can make such wonderful stuff out of scrap. So it is a scrap cross, and there's a kind of an ironic thing within that as well. So that's where I sourced the material from.
And did you make it yourself?
Yes, I did make it myself. I've had some friends give advice and even give a hand, and big thanks to Jerry for that one. And but getting it here was quite entertaining, because the cross, the main upright is 8 foot long. The cross piece is about 7.5 feet long. And I had initially thought I might put the cross up in a way that becomes an angel of the north. It's been kind of referred to and alluded to on a number of occasions by other plinthers, and of course there's a kind of nice tie-in there in terms of public art, but it was quite difficult to pin it at the right point for that, and in the end I felt I was trying to get too many different things going on, and it was better just to stay with the questions and the cross. So I've constructed and brought it down in this current climate, carrying all this stuff in rucksacks and in long sort of cardboard containers, raised a few eyebrows and caused me a few questions on the way, and actually means you can only use about, there's only very few pieces of public transport you can actually catch with this stuff. And this morning I did catch a cab actually, and the cabbie had it stuck out of the window, and it's about a foot out the side of the cab coming down, so I have to be looking out for bicyclists behind us the whole way. And I think that, you know, I think there are some very engaging questions which I hope will stimulate some sort of response, other people wanting to put them up, and I'm any questions that come, I'm hoping to write them down. I'm aware that I can be responsible for what I do. I can't in bringing the interactivity onto this kind of living sculpture, and that becoming a part of what I'm doing and wanting to draw a response both virally and in the square. I'm aware that I can't be sure what will happen or how effective that will be. But anyway, I'm hoping that some people will pick it up on the internet, and there's been a very interesting dynamic to it as an artwork. And I think there's something quite interesting going on there in terms of live art, and because at the moment we've got a lot of the death of Big Brother, or not exactly the death, but this kind of CV program that's economically, I suspect, come to its time, and Channel 4 wanting to do something else. But there has been a sense of, we check out what people are doing all the time and going onto the internet, and it's needed some sort of a new formula, and I think this has been quite an interesting one.
Are you hoping that people will ask you absolutely anything? Am I right in understanding you're inviting the general public to ask you any question during your hour?
Yes, I'm inviting them to say any question. I am actually wanting to nail it up on this cross, so I'm inviting them to engage in the cross, and what is the cross to them, and what does it mean, and how should it be alluded to, and does it belong in the public square or not? It is interesting, though it may not, it's interesting to me that even in choosing to put up a cross, there is an element that's either, gosh, are you being really in my face? Is this risky? And isn't it interesting that I might think that that's a question in the centre of London to many people overseas, the idea that I might ask that question of its cultural place, the cross's cultural place within our society, would be quite a shock, I think. They would not perceive that as to be even questionable or a problem. And I don't simply mean other countries where there has where there is a clearly a Christian mainframe to the nation's identity, my experience of interfaith dialogue has been that the faith dialogue tends to be much more robust about this and doesn't have a problem with it. So I'm hoping that I would really love some responses from people of other faiths and of no faith.
And does the cross play a significant part in your life?
Yes, my background is varied. My enemies say I've had a dapple career. I've worked as an actor. I read law as my first degree, and I've worked in health management. I've worked overseas, and I've worked at home. I read theology up in Durham, and I'm actually ordained as an Anglican priest as well, although I work at the moment as an arts development officer and have done for the last 3 years and don't see an end to that at the moment. But for me it's a faith statement, but I'm not wishing to make that a didactic one in the public square. I'm wishing to stimulate the debate and ask the question and see how people articulate that. That sounds quite esoteric, but at base level, I'm kind of interested in, can you talk about these things? When can't you talk about these things? And on the whole, I find when I do talk to people, they really want to. It's on the agenda, but there is a kind of unwritten clause that kind of says, oh, don't do that, it's a bit too risky. But there's been lots of things that one might have thought were risky on the plinth, and thus far, they've proved not to be. And actually been very engaging and very stimulating from all sorts of perspectives.
Can I ask you to talk a little bit more about your current work at the moment?
Yes. Currently, I'm a creative director of a film competition called End of the Pitch, in which I'm inviting people to use the Bible as a source document to reframe it for a visual generation. And the competition offers a low-budget production, 20,000 for a short film, and then we networked them with some colleagues in Hollywood, and including people like Ralph Winter, who's a producer, done things like X-Men and Fantastic Four and so on. So it's a good opportunity to get noticed, put creative ideas forward. It's also a way of me engaging with integrity, with a filmmaking audience, and asking them how would they reframe biblical material in a visual generation. And that means I'm not necessarily expecting people to come from any particular faith position. I'm expecting them to come from a position of good quality filmmaking. But my work doesn't simply stop with that project. I'm also involved in a nationwide theatrical production. We're working with the Bush Theatre in the West End of London. We're looking to do 72 plays in 2011, more, publish them all at once and hopefully perform them with a whole string of theatre people. I'm working with the Wall Space Gallery in the City of London to develop an annual stream of art that's equally fine art. I'm working with the No Nonsense Theatre Company in the northwest of England, who are they're largely work with marionettes, but they're both sort of do mask work and live action as well. And they've been working with women of non-British origin, migrants and asylum seekers, retelling an ancient text, the story of Ruth. And that's been really That's been a terrific work. I've really enjoyed that kind of engaging across. So I've got a kind of broad spectrum of things that I'm involved in. I'm on a trust called the 2011 Trust to celebrate 400 years of since the Bible was published in English and all that that's kind of brought with it. Some good, some not so good. Celebrate the good, probably, not celebrate the not so good. And we're looking to do all sorts of a variety of things that go along with that. And just to bring it into an education place, because there's a whole bunch of stuff that people don't know. So I've done everything from fashion shows to Christmas installations, and I'm very fortunate to have a kind of job that I want to go back to every morning, and it's great, and I can come and do this kind of thing and it integrates with what I do. So I realise I've been in an enormously privileged position here, but it's a wonderfully creative opportunity.
Can I ask you to say a little about where you're from originally in your background?
Yes, my family are I'm a real smorgasbord. My paternal grandfather was Swedish. My paternal grandmother was from Polish Jewish family that escaped from the pogrom under the Tsar. My maternal family are either from Malta, and one half is from Ireland. So a real mix. And in some ways, I'm a kind of first generation English in that setup. I was born in Lincoln, and I've lived mainly in the north of England, Manchester, Leeds, Northallerton, Manchester again, York, Durham, and I currently live in Bristol, which is about as far south as I've ever lived in my life, although I did spend part of my childhood growing up in London and part of it in Oxford. So I really have lived all over the place, as well as working abroad. So a kind of a real mix. I think I've probably enjoyed living in the margins. It's quite odd to end up in an arts installation at the epicentre of London, and I think that says something about the way art draws in. And yet, places I've lived, Manchester, particularly Bristol in many ways, have got a very good art vibe going on and a very kind of lively and engaging places to be, so I really enjoy that.
And can I ask about your family heritage and how that sort of shaped you as a person, do you feel, with having lots of different nationalities in your blood?
Yeah, well, I think it's interesting, because I think in the 60s, my parents basically, in a way, wanted me to have a clean sheet, which interestingly meant I grew up without going to church or anything like that. I had a no-faith base. So I went to school. My friend Simon Cohen, who was, needless to say, Jewish, and R.J. Gokhani, who was a Sikh. And we were best buddies, but I didn't do faith. They did faith. I didn't do faith. My friend Simon did all the faiths, so he was off for Christmas, but also for all the other kind of Jewish festivals as well. And so I didn't go to church for 13, 14 years at all, and then didn't go again for another couple of years. So my particular coming to faith, the faith element, wasn't so much formulated by my background, but in some ways it provided me a foil with which to engage with that. And so I think my background has been a positive one. The Jewish part of the family was converted by a Methodist mission in the 1900s. So they had come to a faith position. My father rejected that, so I didn't grow up with any kind of forming on that. And in some ways, it's quite interesting to wonder what my father will make of this afternoon. My mother is out in the square waiting to see me, but it'll be quite interesting to see how my various parts of my family respond to the fact that I've been up on the plinth and done this. I suspect some of them haven't quite clocked it's happening yet, and others are well appraised of it. Like all things, some people pick up on these and others don't. I think my home background gave me a freedom to choose, which I think everyone should have.
And currently, what are your passions in life, do
you say? Passions in life? Tasha, my wife, Polly and Colette, my daughters, and just all the things that go with that, like having hamsters and chickens and kind of all the kind of crazy stuff you do, which you do, and going away in our camper van for rough camping away for nights and kite flying and all that kind of outdoor and fun activity that's part of trying to squeeze into busy family life. That's got to be a big passion. And I am passionate about the work I do. I love the engaging stories that I can come with. I did this fashion show, okay, in Manchester. It was based on the story of the prodigal son. It's a great show and quite a different thing to do a narrative within a fashion show. And it had four distinct looks, so it wasn't a narrated story, but there were characters who seemed to have roles within them. And we had this son leaving home by being on a treadmill, which I think was a first for a fashion show, treadmill in the catwalk. And it was some friends of mine from LA who designed jeans and jean companies, and they came over and we did this whole show. And I think you can retell stories in a very engaging way, and the people who participated in that absolutely loved it. But here's the interesting thing. One of the guys came up to me afterwards and said, "It's a really good story. Is this story in the Bible?" And I think there was is it a truth that one of the most famous stories that one of the most famous human beings of all time told might not even be out there? And yet they are the great patterns for so many stories and so many great movies and plays. And in fact, that's the very story that most influenced Shakespeare. And in Othello, he plays that back in a reverse role where he has the father going to the daughter and returning to her, having rejected her. And, you know, the profound influence of it needs to reignite some inspiration, I think. And it's how one does that and bring it. So that excites me.
And who are you doing this for today, taking part in one another and standing on the fourth plinth yourself as an individual?
I do this because I have always wanted to do something on here. I do this because it's me taking part. But I do it because I do not live in an... Nobody lives. Nobody's on an island. Nobody just does it on their own. I'm part of a family. I have friends. I have colleagues. I have work. I have all those environments. And I need... Those must interplay and interlock. That's how it works.
And before you go and stand on the fourth plinth today, is there anything else that you would like to add or to mention, or any closing words perhaps?
Yes. I guess I've chosen the cross because it seems a bit of a cliche. That doesn't mean that it doesn't hold some profound and ancient questions and truths within it. And I really want to just sort of stimulate some conversation across the plinth. This is a living sculpture that I'm taking part in. So there's something very profound about stepping into that. I'm linked to the 2,399 others that will do it alongside me or have done it already. And I think I wanted part of that to record that today, on October the 26th, 2009, faith and belief are vibrant, possible, and open to living in the public place in this nation as they've always been, and they have a part to play alongside others, and I hope that comes across.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.